Tom Woods Show, episode 1220.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, the Tom Woods Show.
Folks, with democratic socialism on the march, you need my free ebook, Bernie Sanders is Wrong, more than ever. Check it out at bernieiswrong.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Joshua Smith is our guest once again. Joshua was a candidate for chair of the Libertarian National Committee. He currently holds an at-large position on the Libertarian National Committee, and he's been rather high profile ever since he got elected to that position. And in particular, he's been involved pretty heavily in the controversy over the so-called Libertarian Socialist Caucus and what that may mean for the party. So there's plenty to talk about. Josh, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me, Tom.
So you are a member of the Libertarian National Committee.
I am.
That's a change from the last time I talked to you. Give us the story. I was not quite at the convention, although I was at the convention. I wasn't really at the convention. I went to New Orleans for the Mises Caucus event. And then just to kind of frankly screw with people, I went over to the site of the convention just to walk around. And frankly, there were a lot of well-wishers there and a lot of great folks, people I hadn't seen in a long time. A lot of them were there. And I saw you and I was telling people you were the man. So give us the background of the whole story.
Yeah, absolutely. And can we just up front talk about how cool it was to be able to lay claim to having Tom Woods trying to whip votes for your chair election
at the very last minute. Yeah, I ran into a couple of people who were such big well-wishers, and they were planning to vote for the other guy, let's say, one of the other guys. And I said, what the heck? Come on. What kind of Woods people are you? And so anyway, they hemmed and hawed. I did my best, but I don't think that's where my specialty lies, let's just say, but I did my best. All right, so what's your story? I mean, you came on the Tom Woods Show. No doubt you got a little bit of the Tom Woods bump, but where did you come from? You seem to have come out of nowhere, and then you became this force where there was almost nobody who was neutral towards you. Either they were going to vote for you for chair, or they were not. It was just one or the other.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've been a philosophical libertarian for 10 years, Tom, and, you know, I've been registered a libertarian voter for 10 years as well. And you know, I'm a big fan of the libertarian philosophy. But yeah, people didn't know who I was a year ago. They really didn't. You know, I was working on Think Liberty. A couple people in some, you know, some chat groups knew who I was. I had, you know, had some online debates with people. But going into convention, you know, I was walking in there pretty new to all this stuff. You know, the debate at the convention was my first live debate I'd ever done, you know, outside of a couple of the online chair debates that we did through video, which, you know, were nothing near what it is when you're standing up there in front of, you know, almost 2,000 people and there's signs and people are yelling and screaming. And so it was a new experience for me. And like I said, no one knew who I was a year ago. We walked into convention. We were pretty confident. We had done a lot of work. You know, I had spent about 2 weeks on the phone with delegates, trying to talk to them and tell them my vision and my plan for the party and stuff that I thought would be important for us going forward. But, you know, at the end of the day, we took 22%, almost 23% of the vote from the most popular chairman the party has had in 46 years. And there's no denying that, you know, whether you love or hate Nick, people know who he is. And they've known who he is for the last 4 years. And like me, he came out of nowhere. You know, he stood up at a microphone at a convention 4 years ago or 6 years ago or whatever, talking about some, you know, resolution or something. And he really made an impact on people. And so to be able to walk in there after 11 months, you know, no one knew who I was and take that much of the vote, I don't feel like it was a loss. You know, I really don't. You know, when I started this campaign, I never had the intention of winning. I didn't think, I mean, I was going to run to win, but I didn't think I had, you know, the ability to win. And you know, at the end there, we really felt like we could. And then, you know, so we lost, you know, took almost 23% of the vote. And then I decided to run for a position, at-large position on the LNC. And I was the third highest vote getter out of 47 candidates. they needed the top five vote getters became at-large members. So I am on the Libertarian National Committee. I have actually more voting power now because, you know, the chair typically is supposed to abstain from votes unless it's a tiebreaker. And so, yeah, I'm on the committee. I still get to bring the same ideas. I still get to use that voice and represent the people who elected me and the people who wanted to see, you know, a more radical, principled voice on the Libertarian National Committee. So that's where I sit today.
Let's speak frankly, you and I right now. I talked to some people who supported Nick. And again, I have in mind yet another person who listens to me regularly, supports me, likes what I'm doing. And he said, Tom, I think I know what you're going to try to convince me of. And by the way, I only did this with a few people. Okay, so wasn't like I went up to 800 people. I went up to a few people. But he said, I know what you're going to try to convince me of. And the thing is, I'm just for Nick, and that's not going to change. I'm for Nick. And I said, that's fair enough. You know, that's fine. I'm not going to badger you. And he said, but I'm going to tell you why I'm for Nick. And he said, it's a couple things. He said, mainly it's the guy can run a meeting. I'm sure you heard this too. The guy can run a meeting. These conventions have been a fiasco in the past because we don't have a chair who can run a meeting competently. And he runs it smoothly and things get done. And this same person said, now look, the way he treated you was disgraceful. And I think that he better knock that off. And I totally agree that that should not have happened. But I have to put that aside because I think what's for the best is this guy can run a meeting. And secondly, and this I got from a number of people, we want somebody who's not going to bring a lot of drama, who doesn't seem like he's bringing a lot of drama to the table. We want somebody who is a libertarian, who is reliably libertarian, who runs a competent meeting, and who doesn't seem like drama follows him wherever he goes. And that was kind of what they were insinuating was, you seem like that guy. To them, they thought of you as like a bull in a china shop. And they appreciated your spirit, and they knew what you were about, what you were trying for, but they felt like the image of that package wasn't working for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been polarizing over the last year. You know, it was one of the reasons why people grew to know who I was. and I'm not going to deny that. You know, I'm trying to bring our party back to a more principled direction. And anybody who's on the outer circle and the thousands and thousands of small libertarians all over the country that are watching us, they know that we've drifted. You know, and so I felt like, you know, if I had to burn down a couple of bridges to start getting people to understand, you know, that this direction we're taking is making us more like the two old tribes and not more like the Libertarian Party, then that's what I had to do. And, you know, and I've faced a lot of backlash from that. But I've also, you know, I've grown a really large following outside of the party, you know, with these smaller libertarians that have been looking for a home or haven't been looking for a political home. And now they see this viable option. They see these people, you know, like the Mises Caucus, you know, that group has over 3,000 people in it. And originally, less than half of them were members of the party. And we've been signing up members of the party left and right, Tom, you know, and you're included in that, you know. And so It's one of those things. It's like at some point, like polarizing, some people think that's drama, but it's just trying to wake some people up and get their spirits rallied and make them understand that, you know, we can do this. We can be a viable party to the duopoly and we can start fighting back, you know, against the empire through this vessel. And so, you know, let it be as it is. That's fine. If they're upset about that, I didn't mean to offend anybody, but sometimes you got to be loud.
We were sitting around, when I say we, Michael Bolden was with me from the 10th Amendment Center, Mike Meharry, who works with him, and then my daughter, 15-year-old daughter, Regina. Four of us were sitting around, and there was a guy at the next table who turned out to be the head of the Libertarian Party of Rhode Island, and he overheard us talking, and we got talking, and I knew right away, okay, this is a guy who, he has a radio show. And he's worked really, really hard in Rhode Island, but we travel in completely different circles. He had no idea who I was or what we were up to or any of that stuff. But what was interesting was he was entirely in your camp. And my fear was, if I don't know the person, then probably he's not. Because I feel like probably all those people are people I know, right? So, but what was great was this was a random guy I just got to know. We hit it off great, and I was really glad to have had a chance to meet him.
Yeah, Pat Ford is amazing.
Yeah, Pat's wonderful. Yeah, I didn't know. I wasn't sure if I should say his name.
Yeah,
I don't want to embarrass him or anything. But it was so great that he said, you know what? He said, yeah, I'm because we were kind of tiptoeing around. So who are you going to vote for chair? And he just came right out and he broke the awkward silence and said, oh, I'm for Joshua Smith. Absolutely. He said, oh, really? And so and he said, and before we could even ask him why, he said, and I'll tell you why. And I can't remember if I told you, Joshua, what he said. Did I tell you what he said?
No, huh?
He said, the reason is he called me. As simple as that. Nobody ever calls me. You know, he says, somebody reached out to me to talk to me. And I thought that showed something. That meant that there's dedication, that the person cares, that there's some desire to connect with us out here in Rhode Island. That to me just spoke volumes. And so that just, and you know, when you were making these trips to all the different state conventions, I thought, well, that's really great, and I'm glad he's doing it. But the part of me that is not political, which is most of me, forgets that sometimes it's that political stuff of campaigning and talking to people and saying hello and making a phone call and shaking a hand. You know, you can easily discount that, but you shouldn't.
No, I agree. And that's, you know, that was the whole, my whole campaign was I was going to get out there and meet as many people as I could. I was going to shake as many hands as I could. I was going to listen to people's fears and what they wanted to see from the party. And, you know, who I am today, this Josh on this LNC is a complete, you know, it's all from that. It's all from me taking in, you know, those fears and those worries and the people who talked to me and said, this is what I'm worried about. I'm worried about this and this and this and this. How can you help me change that? And that's, you know, that's what I'm taking with me to the table here. And Pat was one of those people. You know, I showed up, I actually showed up to Rhode Island. I met with the entire Rhode Island party, I guess, in a bar, and we had some stuffies and had a couple of beers and really cool guys, you know, and they're busting their ass out there. You know, Pat Ford has got more earned media in that tiny state that you can almost walk through than just about any other state chair around the country. Why? Because he's polarizing. You had a conversation with Pat Ford. You know how Pat Ford is. He's a polarizing figure in Rhode Island. You know, he goes out there and he protests against things. You know, he protests against the subsidies for the ball stadium there and stuff like that. You know, and that's the kind of things that we need to be. We're activists. We're a party full of activists. We need to be loud. We need to be polarizing. We need to let the nation know that the things that are going on currently are not good things. You know, these are not tenets of a free society. And you know, Pat Ford understands that, and he's a polarizing guy, and that's, you know, I look up to Pat and I respect Pat for that, and that's the kind of person that I am as well. And you know, that comes to our last talk about me being drama. It's not drama. It's polarizing, and it's important, you know, to help wake up a movement.
I do want to talk about the libertarian socialist issue, but let's get to that in a minute. I want to stay just laser focused on the work you put in and the campaign that you ran. And look, you put in so much effort. It's not like you didn't work hard enough. And as you say, you were up against overwhelming odds, but you've managed to get yourself an at-large seat on the LNC, which is a tremendous victory. But looking back on it, is there anything you would have done differently?
You know, I don't know. I don't know how I can answer that, Tom. Look, I had no idea what I was doing. You know, I think it would have been, you know, nice to have more experience with what I was doing. But no, I don't think I would have done anything different. I still would have tried my hardest to get around the country and shake these hands and talk to people and listen to them. You know, at the end of the day, I think as libertarians, one of the things that we forget about, you know, the majority of the time is that we have two ears and one mouth. We do a whole lot of talking and not a whole lot of listening. And so, I don't think I would have changed that. I think I would have done the same things and probably would have got the same amount of the vote. But, you know, there's new days to fight new battles. And so I'm glad to be where I'm at. I'm glad to be on the LNC, and I'm glad to be able to bring these principles and these ideas. So,
all right, let's talk about the Libertarian Socialist Caucus. I want to know what it is that they believe, in your words, and what's going on with regard to this property rights resolution or whatever it was that was recently voted on.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Libertarian Socialist Caucus is a caucus, in my opinion, of leftist misfits that think that if they use language that people don't understand, they can twist our principles to support violence against business and property owners. Many of them are running, you know, as candidates around the country. They're going on media outlets like RT saying that the party supports Medicare for all. And this occupancy and use mentality. And, you know, some of them are mutualists, some of them are socialists, some of them are actual anarcho-communists. And they're really kind of trying to muddy the waters purposely, which is a leftist tactic. You know that. We all know that, that listen to the show. They're trying to muddy the waters so that they can fit in here and you know, kind of take over a movement that already has ballot access. You know, we already have ballot access in most states. And so it's easy for them to get on a ticket, put that L next to their name and espouse these beliefs that are antithetical to what we're doing. And so, you know, I've been kind of at war with them for over a year, you know, trying to get them to realize that, you know, this isn't what the party stands for. You know, you guys have the DSA or the Greens or whatever, you know. And so, you know, now that I'm on the LNC, we saw an opportunity to stand up to tyranny, as I would like to call it. You know, I see these ideologies as tyranny, you know, this communist socialist ideology that's killed over 100 million people around the world. You know, I don't support it in a party that is centered around non-aggression and individualism. And so we came together, a few of us on the LNC, we came together to put together a resolution that basically left no wiggle room for people who want involuntary economic models to operate under our banner. And we put it out 2 days ago, thinking it would most likely be a unanimous yes vote. The language was solid. You know, it really didn't leave any space, like I said, whatsoever for this violent rhetoric that they're pushing. But it also left space for people with antithetical economic views to participate as long as they weren't touting this involuntary violent structure. And so, you know, it didn't get voted yes on. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, only six or seven of us voted yes on it. And
out of how many?
Out of 17.
Okay.
And so that was a real big kick in the gut for me personally. I know it's a big kick in the gut for a lot of people in the party and out of the party that have been watching to see what we're doing and what kind of strides we're taking to become more principled. And so, you know, it hurts outreach. It hurts a lot of us. But at the same time, I see all these good people coming to the party, like you and Dave Smith and Jason Stapleton and all these great people coming to the party with these loud voices. And we have all these great small L libertarians all over the country that are seeing that, you know, there's people working inside the party to move it in a better direction. And so, you know, it looks bad. It looks bad on paper. I'm not going to sit here and blast people for it, but it is showing that we need people to come to the party. If I was able to come to my campaign less than a year ago to run for chair of the party and then get on the LNC without people knowing who I was, the importance of all the small libertarians coming to the party to help us with this political process is huge, because you can do so much by just showing up. You know what I mean? All you have to do is show up. Show up to your state affiliate, your local affiliate, you know, vote on a couple of issues, go to a couple of meetups, have some beers with some other libertarians. And then when it comes time to become a delegate, you come to the 2020 National Convention in Austin, Texas, and you can vote on things like new leadership for the party. You know, maybe I run again, maybe I don't, maybe someone better than me runs. You get to vote on who our next presidential and vice presidential nominees will be. You know, if you like Weld, you can vote for Weld. Or you can vote for somebody else, you know. So it really shows the importance of coming and trying to, you know, kind of clean out this vessel and make it something that we can all be proud of.
All right, let me play devil's advocate here. The number of people in the Libertarian Party sympathetic to or actually belonging to the Libertarian Socialist Caucus is vanishingly small. And therefore, all the emphasis placed on this is just wasted. It's wasted effort. Forget about it. These people are going nowhere. Everybody knows they're going nowhere. There's so many other things we ought to be spending our time on. But these people, given that they're completely marginalized, are not the people to be worried about. What about that?
This is how I know you're playing devil's advocate, because I know that you know better how this socialist leftist movement spreads. So knowing that, you know, yes, it was small, especially a year ago. There was only the six of them that people keep talking about. Everyone keeps saying there's only six of them. That's bullshit. There's way more than six of them. There's a lot of them. There was one running around our convention with a red and black anarcho-communist flag wrapped around his neck trying to call for this bottom unity movement. It's much bigger than what people think. Just because they weren't able to get enough money together to show up to the national convention. Doesn't mean they won't be able to in 2020. They're organizing, they're recruiting, they're running as candidates. They're telling the public, these are the things that we support. And we need to be loud about it to let people know that that is not what we stand for and is not what we support as a party. And those are not our political goals. And so, you know, if people want to kind of hush hush this and say, oh, it's not that big of a deal. Well, that's how most leftist movements become what they are today. So it's time to squash it. You know, it's time to let people know that that's not what we support.
Incidentally, it's not just that you're dealing with people who are, you know, like instead of being anarcho-capitalist, would be anarcho-communist or something like that. And we're just dealing with people who have different first principles. That is most of what it is. But we're also dealing with people who are just really weird people. I mean, I'll just name a name. I don't know anything about Mike Shipley, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's mentally ill. And I'm basing that on just the kind of things people have shown me that he says. So, for example, Trotsky was more libertarian than Nazis like Tom Woods or Eric July. Eric July's a Nazi. I'm a Nazi, apparently. And then there's another quotation where people are saying, look, you know, Mike, obviously these people are not Nazis and not even within three universes of Nazis. So you sound kind of mentally deranged when you say things like that. So could you maybe, you know, put a sock in it just for your own sake so you don't sound like a raving lunatic? And his response was, well, look, there aren't any actual Nazis around today. So now the word Nazi means people like Tom Woods. So get over it.
Yeah.
Well, but you know what? You can't actually do that. It turns out
it doesn't work that way.
You can't actually say, right. Yeah, that's not how language is.
Yeah. Well, that's another tactic of the left. And you know that, Tom. You know, they don't adhere to definitions of words. They don't believe the definitions mean anything. And that's, you know, that's the big part of their movement is just they try to twist these things up to be what they say they are, you know, and as logical thinkers and as, you know, Austrian economics guys, especially, you know, We adhere to these definitions because that's what they mean. That's what these words mean. National socialism means national socialism, you know. And it was a movement in Germany, and these people were not good people. But it's not who we are, you know. And it always makes me laugh when because Mike Shipley does try to equate me to being a Nazi all the time, and I'm half Israeli, which is hilarious. But then to say Eric July is a Nazi because, you know, Eric July believes in private property borders or whatever, some god-awful stupid thing, you know, that makes
him
a Nazi.
Who knows whatever the heck, yeah, right.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And this is the kind of stuff we're dealing with, you know, these are the kind of intellectually dishonest people that we're dealing with. And it's exactly the reason why we put out this motion was to say, hey, this is not okay. This is not okay in our party. And it's not something that we support. And so, you know, he's one of many in that caucus that cause these kind of problems on a daily basis for libertarians that, you know, they want to talk about this resolution being a waste of time. What is a waste of time is constantly combating people in our party that want to twist up every single thing that someone says. That's what's keeping us from working on candidates. That's what's keeping us from winning elections, you know. So
you're too nice to these people because it's not, I bet you didn't expect me to say that. It's not so much that they're intellectually dishonest. Intellectually dishonest would be somebody who, let's say, uses a fake quotation from Benjamin Franklin and he knows it's fake, but it really helps advance his cause. Like the Greenbacker movement, the people who want the Fed abolished so that the Treasury can directly print the money, as if that's the point. Those people are the worst on this I've ever seen. In fact, Bill Still, who I think tried to get the Libertarian nomination some time ago, who is a big promoter of this, I have to hand it to him. He has tried to – he's got a whole page on his website of fake quotations that he's trying to get his fellow Greenbackers to stop using because you're embarrassing us because these are obviously phony.
Right.
Because they – I know I'm getting a little bit sidetracked.
No, it's okay.
Greenbackers. They make me crazy.
History lessons. I'm okay with it.
My slogan about this is that if a quotation from the Founding Fathers sounds like it could have been written yesterday – it probably was. That's my saying. Because I listened to some of these things that Thomas Jefferson supposedly said. I thought, gee, that's funny. That sounds like a Greenbacker newsletter from 25 years ago. You know, it doesn't really sound like a early 19th century writer. But anyway, the point is, that's intellectually dishonest. If you use a quotation, you know it's false, but you just use it anyway. But to call normal people who believe in the exact opposite of National Socialism Nazis, that's not intellectual dishonesty. That really is a kind of a derangement. I mean, there's something upstairs. There's a light that's flickering, or there's a screw that's loose, or there's a plug that's only halfway in, or I don't know. I mean, I don't get how anybody can. I mean, I've had a lot of opponents in my life, right? I've had neocons who haven't liked me. I've had left liberals who haven't liked me, leftists who haven't liked me. I've had traditional Catholics who don't like me. I've had conservative Catholics, liberal Catholics who don't like me. I've had all, you know, in all the different worlds I've moved in, I've had opponents all over the place, but not anyone in a million years would have used that word to describe me. And of course, listeners right now are all laughing because they're thinking, I listen to this guy every single day. And by the way, dear listener, he is implying that you too must be one of those N-words. He is implying that you too are one of those, because why else would you be listening to me? That's how deranged these folks are. But again, there is a little part of me that is concerned that I know you let the nose, you know, under the tent, and then before you know it, right? I get that. But geez, I do worry that maybe we're giving them more publicity than they would have gotten otherwise. And I'm not sure that it hurts outreach, because I'll tell you, 99.9% of Americans don't know anything about the Libertarian Party, much less the infighting that's going on, and even less than that do they know about libertarian socialists.
Right. Well, it hurts. Like, personally, it hurts my outreach, because my outreach consists mainly of reaching out to smaller libertarians that do follow the party, that do watch the party, that call us all kinds of names because they see the infighting, they see the garbage, they see these leftists, and they watch, you know, national leadership attack people like Tom Woods and so on and so forth. So it does hurt outreach, you know, to a degree, and it's hurt my outreach personally. You know, I when we passed this resolution, or when we introduced this resolution, I currently have an email inbox that is full of emails from libertarians around the country in support of this resolution, saying I've been waiting for the Libertarian Party to do something like this for years. You know, and thank you for the good fight and putting up, you know, doing the things you said you were going to do. You know, it was one of my platform planks was to reaffirm our principles within my first 30 days, you know, and especially the ones on private property. And so, you know, I do think it hurts our outreach, and I see it personally. I see these people that were getting excited about this resolution and that now everyone's all bummed, you know, and so that's what happens. You know, it starts out as a small group, and we, you know, for the last year, people said, oh, just ignore them. They'll go away. They're not going away, Tom. You know what I mean? I tried to ignore them for several months. They didn't do anything. They found new reasons to call me a Nazi and, you know, attack our platforms and our principles and stuff that we support and still operate under our banner. And so, you know, I feel like maybe the resolution didn't have to be such a big deal around the movement, but it became a big deal. And at the end of the day, it would have been an important one for us to pass, but it failed, unfortunately.
I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised that the official Twitter account of the National Party twice tweeted out messages of welcome to me or retweeted something of mine pertaining to the party. I wasn't expecting that, so that was certainly something rather nice. I got a nice telephone call from somebody at National asking me to do something I haven't yet gotten around to doing. But anyway, I mean, it's generally been friendly, and I'm not looking to start fights. I really am not. I just want to spread libertarianism. That's my entire agenda. There's nothing hidden about it. So what else are you going to be occupied with? You've got these people. Oh, actually, wait, let's say something about your debate. Aren't you debating Mike Shipley?
I am debating Mike Shipley, yeah, on August 31st, I think 9 o'clock. It's 9 o'clock Eastern time, I believe. Yeah, we're going to be debating. I guess they tentatively named it how big should the tent be? But it's more so going to be about property rights and why it's not okay to steal people's stuff. You know, that's the point that I'm going to be arguing anyways. And so, yeah, we've been at each other's throats for a year, and someone finally sat down and said, you guys want a debate? And I said, absolutely. So it looks like we'll have a debate going on.
Are you
going
to be able to send me a link to where people can watch this debate?
Yeah. I'll send you the event invite. It's put on by a gentleman named Brent DeRuyter, or the Anarcho Redneck, if you're familiar with him. He's a really cool guy, and he'll be moderating it as well. He's a great guy. So it should be fun. And, you know, and I plan to go in there and destroy, of course. But, I'm still learning to debate. I still get a little emotional during debates. So I'm going to try and put that in check and talk logically and explain why it's important for free people to be able to own their own property.
Well, I'd be glad to link to that. Well, when you send me the link, I'll put it up at tomwoods.com/1220. So you have that. What else is on your agenda for the next? How long is your term?
It's a 2-year term. All LNC positions are 2 years. So they go between each national convention, which is every 2 years, and then you can vote on new leadership. And so I am currently working on a new motion to create a fundraising team for the party. It's something that I said I would do if I was chair, and I made a commitment and a promise to do that even if I was to become an at-large member. I'll be traveling around to help on some campaigns. If you're not familiar, we have 4 sitting state legislators currently. One is a state senator in Omaha, Nebraska, named Laura Ebke. She's a wonderful woman. And then we have Brandon Finney and Caleb Dyer in New Hampshire, who are both running for re-election to their state legislative positions there. So I'll be traveling to New Hampshire to knock doors, wave signs, and make calls with those guys here shortly in the beginning of October. I'll be in New York in November for the election night with Larry Sharp, because that's going to be a good one. If you guys aren't familiar with Larry Sharp, he's been on the Tom Woods Show. He's amazing. He's a great guy. So yeah, I have a lot of that stuff going. Then we're working on some new marketing and branding strategies for the party. I've been working with a guy named Robin Corner, who my girlfriend works with currently. She's part of his social media team, and he'll be coming to our LNC meeting in Phoenix, Arizona at the end of September to talk about new marketing and branding, which is something that we've been historically pretty bad at. So I'm excited to see what he rolls out. And I'm just going to keep moving forward and hopefully, the party becomes a viable option. We go into 2020 strong, and I cannot stress the importance of coming to the party and helping us. I know you have a lot of small L libertarian listeners. We can really make this a viable solution to the 2-party system. And so I hope that you guys will join us and help us move things along.
Do you have a website you'd like to promote?
Just the Facebook page. I believe I'm the first at large with a personal Facebook page like that, but it's just Joshua Smith LNC at large on Facebook. There's also some links there to the current motion that's on the table. The voting does not end for this until Wednesday, so I'm still trying to flip people. Also has my response to the motion there that I put out today. I put out a very strongly worded response to the LNC members. I can give you the links to those too, if you'd like to put them in the show notes. So,
yeah, I'll do that. So there'll be a bunch of links of interest at tomwoods.com/1220, the episode number for today. All right. Well, look, this is great, great update about what's been happening since the convention, what your intentions are, what your activities are. You keep busy, man, because, you're like anybody, you're a working man, you have other things to do, and somehow you're making it all work. So, well, keep on doing that.
I appreciate it, Tom. Thank you very much for having me on again.
All right, before I let you go, a couple of events you might want to know about. At the end of September, I think the dates are the 27th through the 29th, but you're going to have to check on that. The end of September 2018, I'm going to be speaking alongside Ron Paul, David Stockman, and other luminaries at the Mises Institute Supporters Summit. So if you've been wanting to meet Ron Paul, time to scratch that off your bucket list. And the easiest way to do that is to go to the Mises Institute Supporters Summit, because there are going to be so many great people. I think every single one of them has been a guest on the Tom Woods Show. So lots of wonderful people are going to be there, and you're going to have a great time. So check that out. I've got it listed at tomwoods.com/events. Also, not yet listed, but just save the date because it will be happening. There is a very good likelihood that I will be speaking at an event in Orlando, right in my own backyard, on October 13th. So please also keep an eye open for that. I'll give you details when I have them. But tomwoods.com/events is where you can always find what I'm up to. I don't do as much traveling for speaking purposes as I used to, but when I do, I list the events there. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.